Rich Lenkoff is in our studio, the attorney who frequently joins us from Bryce, Downey & Lenkoff. And what's your first thought about this story today?
It keeps getting worse, right? I mean, those lyrics, I think, will be used as part of what I would think is a mountain of evidence that Travis Scott knew about things like this and not only was aware of it, but actively promoted it, right? I mean, to your point, his lyrics, not that lyrics, you know, are generally used as evidence. There's artistic freedom, of course, but by all accounts, in this case, there are several examples of him tweeting, encouraging, using the word, "We want ragers." He was warned by the Houston police chief before that there were issues with the show. When you consider that, John, along with the two prior incidents where he pled guilty of the exact same conduct, how many artists can you remember in history that have pled guilty two prior occasions? It's almost never happened.
Did it here once in Chicago at Lola. Was it 2015?
2015, 2 years later in Arkansas.
Okay, so he has a history of that, and he hasn't dialed it back. So he's up on stage. Now the crowd surges forward. It's not gunshots. It's not a riot. It's just people getting trampled and suffocated, squished to death. So that's the sort of scene that was happening right in front of him. My understanding is, too, that as that was starting to get out of hand, they didn't turn the music and the sound off right away. And in instances in other concerts where it's getting out of hand, some of the artists have said, stop. And like the music comes off. And I don't know if the lights go up, but right there's suddenly a statement made from the stage saying, you all have to go back, turn to the person next to you, say, you're my friend, I'm here to help you. If somebody falls, pick them up. Instructions like that have in the past been issued from the stage. Nothing like that in this case.
Correct. I mean, I've represented musicians, and I've got a client who is a similar promoter to this one, represented venues. The standard protocol is in a mass casualty event that you stop and you don't continue to perform. So I think that was, I think the standard of care was violated here. What he will argue, though, John, is that he continued to perform because if he stopped, that might make people more angry and more, you know, that might lead to a more dangerous situation. I don't think that's a strong argument, but inevitably that's what his attorneys will likely argue.
I got more questions for you about that. Plus, I did want to just bounce the Ahmaud Arbery and the Kyle Rittenhouse case off of you. I know we've talked about Rittenhouse a lot. You'll hear more about it as this trial proceeds, but we won't dwell on it. But just a couple questions for you. Rich Lenkoff's in our studio, the partner at Bryce, Downey & Lenkoff. We're talking about a few of the legal cases in the news, and we have a special interest maybe in the Chicago area in the case of what happened at that concert in Houston, because Jacob Jurinek and Franco Patino, friends from Naperville, one went to Dayton, one went to Carbondale. That's my old alma mater. One studying engineering, the other one studying media and broadcasting. They went to the concert together. And I do not know exactly how it is that they came to die, but they were among the, what was the number now? 9 people that were killed in that concert. The last time you saw or heard of something like this was the Who concert, maybe, when 11 people rushed the doors at the Coliseum there in Cincinnati. By the way, Producer Aleph, you said that we didn't hear every bit of context that we should have noticed in that soundbite we played. What did we miss?
So in this verse, there's another example of how he promotes dangerous activities in his concert.
What's the line we're listening for?
It's stage diving from the nosebleeds.
Play it. Back in our Toyota like I'm in a league. And it ain't a mosh pit if ain't no injuries. I got them stage diving at the nosebleeds. Somebody did do that. Somebody did jump from one of the balconies or upper decks at one of his concerts, got paralyzed. Good Lord. What's going on here, Rich?
Yeah, again, I think if those lyrics were the only evidence against him, it might be an uphill battle again because, just because you write something doesn't mean that you're encouraging people. But when you look at all of the other evidence that we've just discussed, his prior arrests, his prior guilty pleas, what he did that day, I think there's a mountain of evidence against him.
I wonder how worried then, and by the way, he has said that he'll pay for the funeral costs for all of the people. Okay, good gesture, maybe not enough. But I suppose the concert promoters and the venue probably are as much in trouble as the artist is, since they're the ones that hosted this event. They're the ones that sold the tickets, right?
There's no question. There's lots of liabilities to go around, both civilly and potentially criminally. But there's no question that the promoter, that the owner of the stadium, that the security company that was hired, they all are going to be potential defendants who already have been sued. We've already seen lawsuits. So there's definitely lots of liability to go around.
And when you think of all of the dangers that come with crowds, right? Forget about what happened in Las Vegas, but we've had incidents where there were fires. We've had incidents where there were gunshots and then the crowd stampedes. And suddenly people are dying who weren't shot, who weren't doing anything wrong, but literally just couldn't get out of the way in time. And this has been happening for the last few years, these sorts of incidents, pre-pandemic. The Tribune editorialized about this and said, you know, we've got to rethink how we do these things.
You know, there's no question. I mean, in the wake of the Who concert in Cincinnati, you know, general admission seating was banned for years, but that's a very lucrative way to sell tickets to these concerts. So that was reinstated in many venues, in many jurisdictions. And, you know, the Great White concert in Rhode Island where 100 people died from pyrotechnics. These situations are happening a lot. And the key in this case is the foreseeability. I mean, there was definite notice to all of the defendants here that this was a possibility right before the show.
Foreseeability, that's a legal term?
Absolutely. I mean, the question will be whether they were negligent. And going into that is how much notice they had or whether this was just a freak accident. It wasn't because they were on notice before that there were issues.
That this sort of thing happens at his concerts.
Yes.
And do we know exactly what it was that caused the crowd to surge forward, though? Why it was that now there was this crush? There wasn't a fire. There wasn't gunshots. They weren't heading for the doors. So what was it that caused this stampede of sorts?
I don't know. I don't think that's been revealed yet. I don't know if that was. I mean, I know from the videos that were released that from the beginning, hours before, people were already breaching the barricades. So this started way before the events later in the evening.
630, the families of the victims of the 1979 Who concert sued the band, the concert promoter, and the city of Cincinnati. The class action suit filed on behalf of 10 of the families was settled in 1983. Doesn't say here the terms, but I wonder if this will go that way, if they'll settle and we'll never know, or maybe we will know. I think we should know what the consequences are.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that the defendants will try to settle the cases out fairly quickly, but given the amount of plaintiffs involved, there are 50,000 potential plaintiffs. That's going to take some time.
So that has a local tragic angle with those young men from Naperville, and then of course we have two other cases that have some connection, at least one of them does, to the Chicago area. One is Kyle Rittenhouse from Antioch, and then the other one that's less related to us here is the Ahmaud Arbery case. Talk to me a little bit about the Arbery story and how that's going. Where the jury for Rittenhouse was picked in a day, they took 2 weeks to get a jury for Arbery. What's happening there?
They took 2 weeks, John, and ended up with a very non-representative jury. So the county in which the trial is taking place, where the crime occurred, I believe is close to 50% African American. The potential jury pool, meaning the people in that population who could sit on the jury, that is one-third African American. Well, guess how many African Americans are on this jury? One single individual, and there's 11 white people. That's a real problem. In fact, the judge in this case said that that was discriminatory. Yet the judge in this case allowed that jury to go forward, which is very confusing. You are not allowed, as you know, to use race as a means to keep someone off a jury.
This is the case where Ahmaud Arbery is in that neighborhood, maybe walking through someone's yard, looking in their garage. These people then go after him and try and do a citizen sort of arrest.
Yes, right. So obviously race is at the forefront of the entire case. Yesterday, the judge ruled that evidence of one of the defendant's license plates, Confederacy license plates, should be allowed to be seen by the jury. So race is inextricably linked to this case. Yet we have a jury that is, you know, very one-sided in terms of how they look.
Judge in the Rittenhouse case, I'll bet, wouldn't have allowed that. I mean, he's been very particular and, I think, cautious about the words that get to be bandied about. What does a Confederate flag on the license plate have to do with whether or not they shot him or should have shot him or had a reasonable expectation of what would happen and shot him. I mean, what does the Confederate license plate have to do with that?
Well, the theory, of course, that the state is pursuing in the Arbery case is that the defendants, the three white males, were chasing him because he was a black man, not because, as they alleged, that they thought he was perpetrating a crime. So the idea that they had a Confederate flag is relevant to their state of mind, it goes to the theory.
But plenty of people with Confederate flags on their trucks or shirts aren't racist.
True. True. That's for the jury to decide, right? The jury will decide to what degree the fact that they had a flag that many perceive as racist influenced their decision to go after a black man.
What are you thinking about the Rittenhouse trial, and how likely is it, based on what we've heard so far, that Kyle Rittenhouse is so far getting out?
I think the trial is going fairly well for him. Yesterday, there was really dramatic testimony about the self-defense theory, and the person who was shot, who survived,
Grosskreutz,
admitted that he pulled the gun on Rittenhouse first. I think that was a dramatic part of the trial.
Yeah, he said that my gun was pointed in his direction. I got into an argument with one of the listeners about what exactly that scene looks like, and the idea that he held the gun at Kyle Rittenhouse and stared him down, pointing it at him, is what it can look like in a freeze frame. But the testimony at trial is not that. And he said, yeah, my gun may have come into his plane of view, but it's not like he was there to shoot him as Kyle Rittenhouse was there to shoot other people. I'll say it again and again. I'm a bad juror in this case because I don't like that kid and I want him to go to jail. So I'm not on the jury pool. Okay, fair enough. That's all I got to say about that today. Anything else you got for me, sir?
I'm good. Thanks, John.
Your podcast drops when again?
The new one is out yesterday. It covered a lot of these topics, so that is on WGN.com.
Legal Face-Off. Rich Lenkoff is a partner at Bryce Downey & Lenkoff.